And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm Keith Law. Welcome to episode 84 of The Keith Law Show. My guest this week, and this is a thrill for me, is Matthew Murphy of the British band The Wombats. I have long been a fan of theirs, going back to what I believe was their first publicly released single, Let's Dance to Joy Division. I've long enjoyed the music, the lyrics, even the song titles we talk about, all of that. He spoke to me from a hotel room out in Seattle. They are finishing up a U.S. tour. By the time this episode is posted, I think they'll have three dates left. They'll be in San Francisco, Santa Ana, California, and Los Angeles the week of February 21st before heading out of the country. For subscribers to The Athletic, all of my prospect rankings are now up and available. So that includes the top 100 itself and the article of a few players who just missed the top 100, my ranking of all 30 farm systems, 1 to 30, best to worst, and then organizational reports for all 30 major league teams. So that includes a quick comment on the system as a whole, a ranking of at least 20 prospects, or a ranking of 20 prospects, plus maybe notes on some others who didn't make the top 20, as well as thoughts on which players might have an impact in 2022, which prospects specifically, a prospect who seems to have lost all or most of his prospect luster, and a sleeper, a guy I think will make a big step forward this year as a prospect with a good chance to end up on the global top 100 for 2023. If you're enjoying this show, please subscribe if you haven't already. You can do so on iTunes, Amazon, Stitcher, large Swedish streaming service that shall not be named. And if you do so on a site that allows you to leave a rating and review, please do so. I see that a few of you have even done so recently on iTunes, despite the fact that the show itself is not that new. I just want to say I really appreciate all of that. And for those of you interested in buying either of my books, Smart Baseball or The Inside Game, they are both available now in paperback. I recommend you find an independent bookstore near you, and if you don't have one, check out bookshop.org. Well, now I am overjoyed to have as my guest today, Matthew Murphy. He is the lead singer and, dare I say, the brains behind one of my favorite bands, The Wombats, whose new album, Fix Yourself, Not the World, just came out about 3 weeks or so before we're recording this. It is fantastic. It is my favorite album so far of 2022. Of course, the year just started, so I guess that's not that much of a compliment. But anyway, Matthew, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
So I want to start by just talking about the new album, which I think is great. And readers of my personal blog, where I've talked about music forever, know that I adored Glitterbug. It was one of my favorite albums of the last decade. I still listen to it all the time and quote it quite frequently, especially with my daughter. And one thing I got out of Fix Yourself, Not the World is it seemed like a little bit more of a returning tone to the more upbeat sounds of Glitterbug. But then there's more experimentation here, too, when you do things like in Method to the Madness, where it's almost like you've taken two different songs, two different tones, at least, and put them together, going from, in that case, a darker, more melancholy sound to something more upbeat at the end. After the last album, was that kind of a conscious decision? Were you trying to shift towards this more experimental sound, but still go back to the kind of brighter notes of Glitterbug?
I haven't thought about it in comparison to Glitterbug, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Were you comparing it more to the last album?
Yeah, well, for me, you know, to be brutally honest, so many things after Glitterbug changed. So many things in, you kind of, you know, the business side of being in the band, things behind the scenes. I met my now wife. I was kind of back and forth between London and LA. I suffered another kind of depressive episode shortly after that album. Everything kind of, the rug got pulled from underneath me, and I felt like there was a lot of pressure on our fourth album. And I was really proud of how, you know, myself, Dan and Todd handled that, and really happy with how well it did and how well it was received. So for this album, the only thing I was thinking about was taking the energy from Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life, our fourth album, and just transferring it into this next journey or whatever it was. So that was really all that I was thinking about. There was no like grand motivation or grand plan. It was just, I'm going to take that energy and run with it as far as I can.
And for folks who haven't listened to Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life, which came out about 4 years ago, that had Cheetah Tongue, which I love, Lemon to a Knife Fight, which is a very Matthew Murphy sort of song title, I think. And Turn, where you ended up doing a collaboration, I think it was after the fact, with Dagny, whose music I'd heard just kind of elsewhere. Did that come about after the album? Because that was where I thought I started to hear your music in some less common places, where I would typically hear it just maybe on indie radio, or I'd find it now on streaming services. But that one started to pop up because she's more of a pop artist, I think, at least in her native country.
Yeah, she's a pop artist. And kind of we, you know, between our management and us three, kind of thought like that song would really work well with a kind of poppy female vocal on it, to be honest. And she was up for it. And so we all hung out in Oslo for about 6-7 hours, and she did it, and we released it, and that was about it.
Oh, that's great. There are worse places to spend 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah.
I've been in a few of them. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask about the current album is, I really like it, but it is it feels more expansive musically too. And I know you said there wasn't kind of some broad vision necessarily for it, but did you just find yourself listening to anything different in the interim? Because it seemed like you were experimenting more, which is great. You're on your fifth album. You have pretty good back catalog now. You've been around for more than a decade. You know, I know some people would say rest on your laurels and keep churning out the same kind of music, and that would be fine. But it seemed like you took more chances, and you were, you know, I thought I heard a little funk here, and hey, is that a little reminiscent of Prince? Oh, this is more in the electronic angle. I'm just curious if your musical influences changed, or if you found yourself listening to different things in the interim since Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life.
Listening to more things. I mean, probably in the music my wife and I listen to at home, although the majority of that is just whatever my daughters want to listen to at the moment. So I don't really hear too much Baby Shark on the album.
Oh, good. Thank you for that.
But in terms of like, we start, Dan and Todd came to LA 2 or 3 times in 2019, and we wrote, you know, a handful of songs that finally made the record. And then I kind of finished the rest off in the pandemic. But it was kind of our job to listen to what the new things that was that were happening. Like there was, I could hear brass in certain demos. Certain demos had this kind of LCD sound system, early James Murphy, like electronic feeling to them. And then, as you said, some kind of had these kind of super high-end, princey, funky guitars. And maybe there's one other element that I can't even think about now. But when we actually kind of, when all the writing was done and when we were recording it, you know, it was kind of our job to notice these 3 or 4 new things that were happening and to bring them to the forefront as much as possible and dot them around other songs if it worked. Like, you know, we knew Ready for the High was going to have a load of brass on it. And we were like, well, where else can we put this brass? And we tried a couple of other songs, which didn't work. And then Wildfire, okay, that worked. Worry, that works. The LCD sound system was already kind of in Flip Me Upside Down. And it was like, well, let's try it here. No, that doesn't work. This Car Drives All By Itself, that works. So that's what we did. We just kind of picked up on the new things that were happening and tried to kind of spread it across the album. in the places where it would fit. Yeah.
Now, I said earlier, I've been a fan since I first heard Let's Dance to Joy Division, I think probably on Sirius XM. I don't even want to say how many years that ago that is, because that will reveal how old both of us are at this point. But what really caught me, not only was it super catchy, but the lyrics are great. You write lyrics like basically nobody else. In fact, I have a great story where when my daughter, my oldest daughter, was 9, I was on a business trip out seeing baseball players, and I get a call from her mother saying, "Why is my daughter singing, 'Does he kiss you till your lips explode?'" Which, for the folks who don't know, is from Pink Lemonade, which is on Glitterbug. Yeah. And I don't know if this, I apologize, it's such an open-ended question, but where does your lyrical style come from? Because like I said, nobody else writes, that I can think of, writes lyrics like you. If you showed me your lyrics without attribution, I feel pretty confident I could say, I think that's Matthew Murphy's work.
Thank you. I mean, I guess that is the goal, isn't it? To stand out a little bit. Where does it come from?
And I was curious, I'll just follow up too. Like, do you, it doesn't have to be music too. I'm wondering if you're, you know, is it literature, poetry? Who knows what your sources could be? Because it is so different. It just made me curious if there was something you pinned it to.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can really think of is, well, yeah, there's kind of two things. You know, when I first started, you know, writing songs, I felt like I was just ripping off Radiohead, to be honest, a lot. It was kind of very ambiguous and it wasn't very good. And then at some point, like I heard, you know, people like Pulp, Jarvis Cocker, things like that. And just the kind of risk taking that people like, you know, him and his contemporaries were doing, I kind of then started applying that to my own songs and writing about extremely personal things and trying to take humorous slants on very serious topics. And I guess I just kind of out of practice got good at that. So I remember there was a time when I realized, well, I don't have to do that stuff anymore. I can be completely honest and vulnerable. And well, let's see how people react to it. So there was that. And then there's also something very important to me is like just song titles and this kind of free, you know, when I'm working with other artists or whatever, I don't know if they quite get it or they think I'm a bit weird because I'm so obsessed with song titles. But, you know, they're so important because they're there before you even hear the lyrics or hear the song. And it's like, if it's interesting and it's engaging, then it encourages people to go into that world even more. And also for me, you know, say I write 60 songs a year, like, you know, 20 of them are going to have really kind of exciting titles to me. And those titles are what propels me to actually finish the fucking song. Like if it hasn't got a good title, I'm like, well, you know, if there's some stumbling blocks along the way, I'm more likely to go, right, okay, let's start something else or I'll start something else. So yeah, I don't know. They're the two bullet points I could give in reference to lyrics, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the lead single, I think it was the first single off this album, the first one I heard at least, If You Ever Leave, I'm Coming With You, to me is, it's very, again, sort of like the distillation of your lyrical style. It's a great title. It's very, it's almost eye-catching. I feel like, I don't know, the way I consume music, at least, if it's an artist I don't know, but I see a playlist or someone recommends something, if the title's interesting, it stands out, it's different, it's funny. Yeah. I'm just automatically more interested. There's too much music otherwise for me to not have some kind of mental filter to figure out what to click on. And when it's not a band, I'm already interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Totally.
Yep.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I have to ask about, I apologize if you've answered too many questions about this, but about a year ago, my oldest is a teenager and she's on TikTok all the time. And she already knew your music, obviously. But then she's telling me that Greek Tragedy is going viral on TikTok with this remix. And I listened to the remix and it's, you know, it's your vocals. It's clearly still the same song, but the music is so completely different than I think anything you guys have ever recorded. I'm 48, so a lot of my formative years as a music fan came in the 80s, and it reminded me of stuff I would hear on the radio, the music that was backing it up. So I'm just curious how that came about, and have you seen younger people at your shows? You've been on tour a bit. I know you're coming around this way later this summer, but have you noticed a change in the demographics of the audience thanks to that song going viral?
It's kind of mad because we realized that, you know, in Glitterbug and our fourth album, we were like, we kind of seem to be retaining the kind of core fans in the 30s who knew our first album, but then there's kind of droves of younger kids coming in. So we could see that trend, and then this TikTok thing kind of magnified it. I think we are, it's been amazing that so many people have been able to find, you know, other songs in our catalog and get into the band through this new avenue. But the whole TikTok thing it was really crazy. I mean, it was such, as amazing as it's been for us, you know, it was such a kind of non-event, really. It was like my manager called me up and was like, we're having a viral TikTok hit. And I was like, okay, what song? It's like, oh, the Greek Tragedy Oliver Nelson remix. And I was like, when did we release that? Like, it was Oliver Nelson, and when did we release this? And he was like, oh, well, Warner commissioned it, around the Glitterbug release. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, did it get released anywhere? And he was like, yeah, physically on a Head Candy compilation in like two countries in Europe. And I was like, wow, how did this influencer get a hold of it? He was like, I've got no idea. I was like, right, okay, cool. Yeah. great work, I guess. See ya. So it was just very strange. It kind of feels like it has happened to a different band, and I still haven't heard the remix all the way through. Like, I probably heard the first 45 seconds. Very, the internet is a wonderful and scary place.
Yes, very much so. It's weird. And I find like TikTok and Snapchat, which my daughter is also on over my, I wouldn't say my objections. I have hesitation, but she's allowed on it. But I also look and say, this is the point where I feel old, right? Like now I'm my parents.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a technology I don't quite grasp. Yeah. Particularly, it's even more in the way they consume it. I do not understand my daughter flipping through and it's 20 seconds of a song here and a little bit. Like, I just can't. Yeah. You know, and now my friends and I are sending like fun comedy videos from TikTok back and forth. I'm like, oh, now I'm one of the olds who's coming to ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah. It's one of the positive things about kind of how quickly people are kind of ingesting information is that like the average song length now has like dropped like 50 seconds, which is great for me because like, you know, You Ever Leave I'm Coming With You is like 2:45. And sure, about 10 years ago, if I'd have had a song like that, I would have been like, it needs something else, doesn't it? Okay, let's leave that. Whereas now it's like, no, 2-minute songs are perfect. In that way, it's kind of really opened a lot of doors for kind of songwriters and creatives and stuff. I just went off on a tangent there.
No, that's okay. I enjoy it. I, you know what, if you don't like the short song lengths, Iron Maiden is still putting out albums.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they had an 18-minute song on one of the recent ones. And I was like, guys, I've loved you since I was, and even, I think you lost me there. Yeah. Somewhere around the 8-minute mark, I think I had to bail. Yeah. I did want to ask you about one last thing, a topic that's a little personal for you, but also for me. You've spoken publicly, even mentioned earlier, having issues with depression, mental illness. Longtime readers of mine know I've talked about having anxiety probably all my life, not getting a diagnosis till my late 30s. And, I do take medication for it. I take escitalopram, and you've spoken about taking medication and you didn't have the same experience I did. And I'm curious if you would just sort of share your thoughts on what that was like. And sort of, you mentioned it's ongoing. So what sort of things do you do now to try to just take care of yourself and deal with the mental illness?
Yeah. That kind of Guardian interview kind of skews things a little bit. You know, that's kind of 80% truth and like 20% like digging in for on behalf of a record label, I think. I've suffered with depression, anxiety, or suffered. I mean, I I'm used to it now, and I try and harness it as much as possible, but. I've had like 3 or 4 pretty sizable kind of bouts of depression, kind of always had anxiety. And I've been on and off meds since I was kind of 21. And now I'm on like fluoxetine, which has been really good, actually. But what do I do? I mean, I do therapy. I exercise as much as possible, yoga, mindfulness, breathe, you know, breath work, all these things I've found have really helped me a lot. And, you know, one of the things that has really helped me the most is to realize that the majority of like thoughts I have are fucking just bullshit, basically, and that I can remove myself from them, and that I can be objective and say, that's not going to serve me. So I'm going to try and leave that. Like, I don't ruminate on negative thoughts anymore, which has kind of really helped me. And I guess that takes years of practicing to get to sometimes, and that's why therapy is so useful. But I don't know. It's not. I might as well become its friend.
I use it. Kind of a similar mix of things. I should exercise more. And of course, I finally got warmer here in Delaware. I went for a run yesterday, and now I'm like crawling around the house at this point. Like, that's what happens when you don't exercise for 2 months. Yeah, it's really bad. Yeah. But a little medication. My therapy appointment was 3 hours ago, and I'm glad you mentioned meditation. That has done a lot of good for me. It's another thing I should do more, because I almost feel like I can't do too much of it.
Yeah.
That in turn, at least for me, has helped me with the other point that you mentioned, of this idea of thoughts are transient. I mean, they will, you know, if you can latch on to them, and I'm very prone to that sort of spiraling thinking that's a hallmark of anxiety disorder. But when you learn to just let them go, it's not that I make it sound easy. It's not that easy, but it is, it's better.
I mean, when I say kind of meditation, mindfulness, I'm not doing, you know, it's not a daily practice. I mean, like, working out is it like I have to work out every day, otherwise I'm a mess. It's more, and this is getting kind of heady now, but the aspects of mindfulness, such as like practicing the witness, like over your thoughts, like that's really helped me, like witnessing what I'm thinking about and seeing if it like serves me whatsoever. And if it doesn't serve me, I just flick it off. And that's something that if you can get proficient at, which I'm not, really kind of alleviates a lot of the pain and suffering that mental problems can bring with them. Mental problems. I'm not sure how PC that is. I didn't want to say problems, but you know what I mean.
Yes, absolutely. I never quite know what to call it, how to describe it, right? And it's often a matter of degree, right? I could wax on and on about how anxiety disorder has wrecked a lot of things in my life, particularly when I was not doing well at managing with it. And yet I know there are other people who have more serious mental health issues. So I often find myself pulling up a little bit short when talking about it, unless someone asks me directly, which does happen from time to time, then I feel a little bit more comfortable opening up. So I understand.
Yeah. I feel like one other thing is like the if I don't try and cut it off early on or at the source, then it becomes physical, it becomes emotional, it becomes all consuming, and I start acting upon it. Like, you know, I'll drink too much, or, you know, I haven't done this for a long time, I disappear off on a bender for a few days or whatever it is. Like, if I don't cut it off at the source, then it completely consumes my entire being, and then that's where all the really messy stuff happens.
My guest today has been Matthew Murphy of the Wombats. I strongly encourage you to check out their entire discography, but particularly Fix Yourself, Not the World, which is their latest, their fifth album. You are still on tour, I think, till the end of the month here in the United States, and then you head back to the UK, if I remember correctly. Do I have that right?
Seattle now. We finish in LA on the 25th, and then 2 weeks off, then Lollapalooza, South America, and then UK arena run. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the new record.
Thank you, Keith. Thanks so much.
That's all for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. Just to let you know, there'll be a little bit of break in baseball, written baseball content from me, probably for about a week and a half or so. But I will be back later this month with some draft content, as we may not have Major League Baseball anytime soon, but the colleges and high schools have begun, and I will be hitting the road myself to go out and see some draft prospects. I will report back to you as soon as I see somebody. Thanks so much for listening, and stay safe.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.